What we do is we review that biannually, every 2 years, to ensure that we're shifting to the threat, cost effectiveness, and engagement of our warfighters' capability gaps. In this case, we look at the flow down from senior leadership, from our Chief of Naval Operations and Commandant of Marine Corps, and then we actively go out to our fleet commanders around the world and ask them where the technology gaps are from their perspective. And then we bring that together, and then we have a strategic review to bring that updated strategy to a draft state. And then we go back to all of those folks and brief them to ensure that we haven't missed anything. And in doing that, the update over the last 2 years is really a refinement of the focus areas. And we have 9 focus areas in our S&T strategy update for 2014. And in those focus areas, we have a whole list of research initiatives. So that's where the refinement and the shift has been, specifically in underwater maneuver warfare, electromagnetic maneuver warfare, autonomous engagement, directed energy, and cyber information dominance. So those are the updates that have occurred. And as we rolled that out, it's important to know that you don't just read that document, take a test, and we're done. It's truly a living document that allows those research initiatives then to really ebb and flow based upon the discoveries and inventions that emerge over the coming months and years, as well as the technologies that we already have on the shelf that can be brought together through our academia, industry, and naval research enterprise.
S&T is approximately 1% of the Navy's budget. You call it the venture capital. Can you give me a snapshot of that investment portfolio, the timeline, and how you maximize the taxpayer dollars?
Absolutely. So it is roughly 1%, and in real dollars, it's $2 billion annually. And it's in an appropriations account called research and development. And it's at the very what we call left side of that research and development appropriations account. By law, we are given direction on how we can spend that in broad terms, and it has to be spent on science and technology. In that, we break it down into 3 categories of science and technology funding. The first category is called basic research, and then we have applied research, and then we have advanced technological maturation research. That basic research is truly like test tubes, petri dishes, phenomenology. We spend roughly $600 million a year on basic research. The applied research, we spend roughly $800 million a year. And in that, we take that basic research and we knit together applications to see how we can take that laser capability and make it into a laser gun, how we can take that pulse power concept and turn it into a component of a rail gun. And then as that matures, then we go to the third type of S&T funding, which is called advanced technology maturation. And we spend roughly $600 million a year in that third category, then taking those basic and applied research concepts and ideas and bringing things forward, such as rail guns, such as our laser cannon, and other things of that nature.
You're showcasing the electromagnetic railgun. Many are getting a first look at it. Tell me about the success of that project and its expanding potential.
Certainly. So the electromagnetic railgun, and normally we just shorten that to railgun, but it's important to understand the electromagnetic portion of that because that's the true technology. And the ability for us to bring large, very dynamic power supplies and be able to then inject those into a rail. You can think of the rail such as a rail on a train track, but we curve that rail and make it into a barrel. And when you do that, just like you feel the hair on your head go up when you have static, right? We inject that pulse power, and an electromagnetic field is generated at very high power, which then generates a force. We call it a normal force. And if you have a bullet, we call it a projectile, in that barrel, that bullet will be subject to that force, and that will accelerate that bullet to greater than the speed of sound, multiple times the speed of sound. The fact that we spent money doing applied and basic research on power generation, on materials for barrels, for projectiles, and then having the foresight to bring it all together to an electromagnetic railgun, that's exciting. That is truly a breakthrough in naval gun technology. we will realize in the next decade the ability to integrate a railgun on a ship at sea to be able to reduce the overall cost per, what we call cost per shot, but also reduce the logistical tail of training and support and resupply that our ships have to go through today with the traditional gun systems.
Admiral Greenert said in his keynote, "Get me off gunpowder." Has the railgun opened more doors for more research for other alternatives?
The short answer to that is yes. And again, in the science and technology realm, we need to be doing the basic research on things that are thought of to be unavailable. No way. We can't do it. I said it earlier today, you know, flubber and flux capacitors. We focus on those technologies that then we can see with leap ahead opportunity. And when you look at the electromagnetic railgun and what we've brought together, it opens up the doors to take those similar technologies and apply them in the applied research to different domains and different applications. And we have several studies underway to see how that can be done.
You've developed a number of autonomous systems. What makes these different from traditional unmanned vehicles? And tell me more about them.
Well, there's differences and similarities. And you really want the similarities so that the differences can emerge. All unmanned systems have a vehicle of some type, has a control system of some type, and has the connectivity to make sure that you can talk to it. We just had a swarming demonstration where we took multiple boats and we allowed them to talk to each other and act as a single entity to combat a threat. We're developing and exploring the underwater, large diameter unmanned underwater vehicle, the LDUUV, as well as we have a complementary investment in research in our air domain. So all of those share those similar constructs of an unmanned system. The uniquenesses and the challenges come in the domain that we need to operate in. Underwater is slightly different than air and on the surface and in space. When we talk about being able to communicate from the control system to the vehicle, when we fly our vehicle in the water, when we have to detect and avoid underwater terrain, those types of challenges come to our research scientists to determine the best way to go forward. And we're seeing some incredible breakthrough technologies in autonomous algorithms, in neural network engagement, in glider technology for flying in the water, as well as in control systems, which you saw, ACUs, and the ability to rapidly train and operate unmanned systems in the air domain. So it's exciting, different, but similar.
Greenert implored the audience to lock your IT doors and to think cyber safe. How do you plan to foster a culture of cyber secure and curb the loss of proprietary information on highly classified systems?
Sure. Cyber safe is absolutely the right way to proceed. The scenarios and documented instances of IT intrusion, be it innocuous and just a playful thing, all the way to a devious and disastrous, is there. We have a responsibility across the entire United States of America, but in our science and technology community, to understand the phenomenology of those attacks. And then the phenomenology of information technology systems so that we can not just develop barriers to lock the doors, but holistically be able to understand how those intrusions occur so that we can basically engage with a designed-in capability that allows, like a human, to be able to thwart another human's engagement, either verbally, physically, and so forth. So we have research in those domains, as well as research, near-term research, that is helping the current fight today.
quickly tell me a little bit about your background before you came to ONR and what experience you bring to the position?
Sure. As a product of the University of Notre Dame as a mechanical engineer and the Naval ROTC program there, and being able to fly A6 intruders off of our flight decks and carriers and fight the fight and actually be beneficiary of science and technology, not even knowing that. As we decommissioned that A6 community, I transitioned into the acquisition community, and I've had a number of different acquisition leadership positions across weapons, platforms, and sensors. I was honored to be selected into the flag wardroom, and I take that responsibility seriously. And I've had the opportunity to lead warfare centers, lead program teams, and be a program executive officer, all elements of our naval research enterprise. When I was given the opportunity to be the chief of naval research, I had landed in my dream job. This is an incredible opportunity from a leadership perspective to bring that naval research enterprise together from an intellectual capital perspective and promote that, bringing in industry and academia, as well as being able to field those breakthrough technologies. So Rear Admiral Matt Winter is in the best job in the Navy as the mad scientist of the Navy.